Hello, ladies and gents, and welcome to Season 2, Episode 14 of the Homesteading UK podcast. I'm your host, Alan, here with my friend Mike. Hello, Mike.
Hey.
How you doing?
I'm sticky, bruv.
You're sticky? What have you been doing?
Covered in honey, mate. Everything's covered in sticky honey. It's
rolling
great.
Honey and throw them to the bees.
And it's a moment, mate, because there was a time at the beginning of the year... Well, I didn't think we'd be doing this year.
No, me too.
So
I can't believe we are doing it, if I'm honest.
No, and we haven't got a great harvest, as in quantity-wise.
No.
But it is it's quite special in it, knowing that we're still doing it, and some of these things that we've done before. We were really worried with the demise of our colonies this year. Mm. Didn't think we'd get a harvest. And I'm in a position where I think the bees have got enough. We might have to feed a little bit.
I think there's a couple of colonies that I'd like to feed just to make sure we get them through, yeah. To start on the basis of last year, which is not something I like to do, but I think we probably need to.
But we've got enough.
Where we are. Yeah.
And that's a lovely thing. You know, that's as good as having that time where you're harvesting out your vegetables and you look at your onions and think, yeah, that's going to see me through to the end of the year or what have you. And it's just such a nice thing to have that honey looking at it rather than looking for it. I know we spoke about those things, but...
yeah.
It's just a beautiful thing.
Well, I think there's
and it smells great in here.
That's really smell good. I think there's a couple of other colonies that I've not been to that I was going to try and get to. I just didn't have the time. I think it's quite possible that we'll come to the spring and find this honey surplus in there as well.
Right.
And I'm not against the spring extraction. There is, if that's the case.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden we're in plenty of honey. For the...
I'm going to move this phone over so it's a bit closer. Right. What do you reckon?
Yeah,
put it down there.
That's probably better. Yeah. Nice one. There you
might. Just mind all the noise though, mate.
Get a bit of sound
like, rattling around there now.
It's going to sound wrong, isn't it? That's Alan uncapping.
Uncapping.
He's using a special fork to take the caps off.
Yeah.
Oh, look at that. And the honey's dripping out into a little tray. Mate, you've done that before. Skills.
Once or twice.
And so what we're doing today is getting our honey harvesting.
Yeah.
So we're in a nice warm room and we're just doing our... We do ours by hand manually. We haven't got any machinery here. Certainly not any motor-driven machinery. We've got a... radial extractor that we use just to spin the honey out, but
yep.
Everything else is done by hand, so we're using an uncapping tray and uncapping fork. We just take the tops off so that the honey can be spun out, and then it goes into an extracting machine, which I'll take a photo of and put on the website.
Yep.
And then it gets put through a couple of strainers and then straight into the jar. So in terms of olive oil, this would be... can't say unfiltered.
Extra virgin.
Unpasteurized. Untreated.
It's what they call it. Cold pressed. Extra virgin. Cold pressed. Extra virgin.
Yeah.
Honey.
Oh. But ours is raw.
That's what we should call it.
It's not unfiltered though, is it? Because it does go through.
It's not filtered. It's not filtered.
Oh, it's strained.
It's strained.
Oh, nice.
It's not a filter.
Raw, unfiltered.
That's a sieve. Honey. It's a big sieve we put it through. That's all it is.
So we do run it through a sieve just to get bits of wax out.
Most people find wing and bee leg a bit unpalatable.
Yeah, I've always liked a bit of leg.
So I just think, you know, for the benefit of those people, we take that out, don't we? We're not too fussed.
But what is very important is that all of those beautiful volatile compounds and pollens and essential kind of like scents are going into our honey, aren't they, I would say, because we're not heating it. And that's the big difference, isn't it, is that... I would imagine for a lot of honey, one to be runny that you buy,
yep.
But also to pass probably some stringent laws about marketing and processing, it's probably pasteurised.
I'm not sure. I mean, obviously the cheap stuff is. I think you can find it that's not.
Oh, you can definitely find it, yeah. But you're going to pay a lot for
it. Yeah, you're going to pay a lot for it. And I think, you know, this is, when we talk about being able to make things better ourselves, this is absolute premium.
Oh, isn't it?
Premium products, as far as I'm concerned. You don't get any better honey than this honey that we're producing.
I don't think so.
But no chemicals used other than whatever the bees might have found when they're out and about. We don't use any.
No.
So the
other thing is that our beehives are not treated. So as well as the products not going through any pasteurisation or anything like that, our actual colonies, we are treatment-free beekeepers, which means that we're not using any antibiotic strips or anything like that.
Not even organic, right? Yeah, treatments, no.
No, nothing at all.
So these bees, as we've spoken about before, this is not pets, this is not livestock. These are a wild animal happens to live in a box that belongs to us, and they happen to be able to.
Oh no, we're bee farmers, weren't we? Well, no, we weren't very successful bee farmers.
I'm not sure. I'm not even sure we can call ourselves beekeepers, to be fair.
This year, in cow equivalency, would be all our cows running away except one.
Well, I've decided I'm no longer going to be a beekeeper.
All right.
I'm a bee catcher.
A bee catcher? Oh, really?
Yeah.
Bee whisperer.
Because I can't keep the bees. Well, I can catch the bees, right? So okay, this year, mate. I'm a bee catcher.
Right, mate. I'm down with that.
Well, anyway, so
I'm just going to be a honey eater. I think that's where we're at.
But well, this is one of my favourite days of the year because the sun's gone down now. It's just getting dark outside. And the natural rhythms, I know you like to get in there first. Get in there first for that. But the natural rhythms of the year of us getting together and doing this now, I don't know how many years we've been doing it, but it's got to be probably 7 or 8 now, I should think, we've done this.
Mm.
And it's a really rather splendid thing to do, I have to say.
And it tastes so good.
Well, I normally go home with diabetic shock after doing this. Yeah.
I'm just tasting this one here.
Just
I'm getting a bit of strawberry out of that one, mate.
It could be, couldn't it? Because I said
get your hand in there and have a little. We're just tasting the drippings here. So I think that there's definitely some fruit going on in there. Fructose, I'm getting. Fructose. Getting a powerful punch.
Oh, it's lovely, though. Isn't
that delish?
That is like floral.
I'm getting a lot of fruit there.
I am as well.
Yeah,
on the end. Strawberry's a good shout, actually, yeah.
So we don't know what they were dealing with. These, this second lot that we're having here is from the farm in Arlington, and they were
is
on.
Is it from Arlington?
They were on. Yeah, this is.
You got these ones? Is it both from. Oh, is it the.
No.
Moved up there?
No, you bought one lot from.
You've got both these ones from Pied Jupiter Mansion.
Oh, yeah.
They're both from yours.
Ah, no, this is from. This is from Dower House.
This
is from the farm. And they will have been working broad beans, but.
Lime tree. There you go. That's why it's so light as well.
Whoa.
That's why it's so light in colour.
Linden honey.
Yeah. Darling.
Wow. I'll tell you what, that is.
It is splendid, isn't it? So
lovely.
Nice to be back doing this. What have you been up to, though, mate? Let's get back into our normal kind of.
Well, I think.
Chatter.
I think over the summer, I had a bit of malaise. I had a bit of a time where I was going to work and I was working vegetable growing.
Yeah.
In the tunnels, out in the fields.
Yeah.
And it was all consuming.
Yeah.
You know, as it should be at that time of the year. If you're not really rushed off your feet, you're doing something wrong, in my opinion, at that time of year.
Yeah.
You know, June, July. But as things started to slow down, I found that some of the things that I'd missed doing started to come back in, and I'll talk about those in a minute. So yeah, if you're not busy this time of the year doing something wrong, or certainly at that time of the year you were anyway, but to be June, July, you know, it was relentless, the work, and so in order to sort of manage that, I found that I didn't have a lot of time or space or inclination for some other things, which is quite rare for me actually. And I was still doing some making and some woodwork, but a lot of the other things, I was just too tired, if I'm being honest with you.
Yeah.
You know, I was doing full days physical and then coming home and just chilling out and relaxing. But since it's gone into August, things have slowed down a tiny bit. And then some of those other things, which were areas that I'd explored before, starting to come out. The bacon being one, you know. And wanting to have a go at making a lab now and things like that. Some opportunities where I really wanted to just get back into some habits. One thing that hadn't stopped though was the bread making, and that's just continued. And I'm really pleased that that's continued. So, you know, back probably a year ago when you were saying you bake all your own bread. Well, I bake all our bread. And that's a really nice feeling to have. And but the other thing I've started to do is to expand some of my bake, because I'm not a great baker, I'm not precise enough. But I also, I've just got a new oven, and I think a lot of it was because my oven wasn't actually very good.
Okay.
And having
it's not your fault at all then, after all.
Well, some of it was pretty my fault, I think. But the difference in having an oven which seems to cook, according to what the recipe says, is quite exciting.
Okay, yeah.
And so just having a new oven, it gives you the confidence to try some recipes, because you've got some form of assurance that they... If you muck up, it's you, not the oven.
Yeah.
So I've been trying to get a few basic recipes under my belt, my little sultana loaf that I know you've tried now and a few other people.
I've done it a few times now, a little tea loaf. It's lovely. It's
really good.
So if I don't make it now, I'll get daggers off my missus. You're going to make that then?
Yeah. And I'd like to try it with a bit of apple and cinnamon instead of the raisins. That's my next call.
Yeah.
Because I'd like it to be something I could eat cold as is, put cream on it or custard on it and have it as... And I think it could work with apples.
Because the first thing I did was have the custard.
Yeah. Well, the biggest cost in it is the sultanas.
Yep.
So, you know me.
Yeah.
I'd like to try and take that away.
You want to try and make it so the tea bag's the most expensive thing in there, yeah?
Yeah, man. So, you know, we're getting to a place perhaps where I could take that away.
Yeah.
And see what it's like. And that recipe is actually for wholemeal, self-raising wholemeal flour. And I'm yet to make it with.
I haven't done that yet either. And nor have I used the... What's the sugar it asks for? Because it's not regular.
Golden sugar or brown. Whatever. I always just use normal.
Yeah, I've just used granulated sugar.
But wouldn't it be interesting next year to make it with my own flour and maybe some honey?
Yep.
And some tea.
Yep.
And some apples from the farm. And then suddenly, whoa.
Yeah, not far away.
Because I haven't got the dairy. No. I don't have to worry about the dairy. There ain't none in it.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, my kids like to eat cakes and things. I've been baking a bit more lately as well. And part of that is about lunchboxes, trying to avoid buying all that packaged stuff.
Well, exactly the same for me. Exactly the same.
So I've been making things like shortbread and cakes. And to an extent, cakes are really good because I can buy the flour in bulk and we've got the eggs and everything else. I went to buy a tub of margarine, right? Obviously, we don't have butter, as I talked about before.
Mate, tell me about it.
I went to buy a kilo of stalk margarine, which is lactose-free. Suitable for our £3.85.
Yeah.
And I was just like, that's gone up
unbelievable
by at least a pound.
Yeah, so I'm well knowledgeable about this now, mate.
Well, okay.
So, that's your stalk, which is your brand.
Yep.
Right? So, I've been buying bacon spread.
Okay.
Seen that?
Yep.
In Asda, that's only 60p.
But, has it got skim milk powder in it? As often they do.
Oh, well, okay.
Right?
So, I'll have a look.
And the reason they've gone up, obviously, is to do with Ukraine, because it's sunflower oil they're using to make it, presumably. Mm. I'm assuming that's what it's about. So, I get it, but at the same time, as someone that potentially uses quite a lot of it.
Mm.
It's like all of a sudden become a huge expense.
Yeah, okay. Well, it'd be worth having a look to see what some of the cheaper house brand ones are made from.
Yeah.
So I shop in Tesco's, as you know, and theirs is considerably more than Asda's. Right. Asda's definitely the cheapest for that sort of thing. But I wouldn't be surprised you get something like that in your Lidl or Aldi.
Aldi's one has got skim milk powder in it.
I'll have a look when I'm next into Asda and have a look.
You know, as things go, it's not the end of the world. As the lactose intolerant, it's the skim milk powder part of it is not too bad.
It's still half the price of butter.
But it's still, my kids, it's not great. You know?
No, still half the price of butter.
Yeah.
So much so that in the UK now, you're getting security tags on butter in supermarkets.
Yeah, that I saw the picture. Was that who put that up? Someone sent that on.
Incredible.
Someone.
True.
Yeah, mad. Yeah. Absolutely mad.
But it is something which is in everybody's face now.
Mm.
Every conversation on the radio is about cost of living expenses.
Mm.
And so, you know, I don't ever want our podcast to be a bit doom and gloom because that is not what we're about. In fact, it's probably
the opposite of what we're trying to be about at the very least. Yeah, absolutely.
And I know that I'm feeling the challenge like everyone else is out there, but just being in an environment where I'm growing my own food and taking care of some other business around that, like my fuel and it's a nice place to be in and a nice position to be in, because people are worrying, aren't they, about their, some people are worrying about eating or heating.
Yeah.
And I've got them covered at the moment.
Yeah.
But not, you know, doesn't mean that I'm not finding it tricky, because I think all families are with the cost of things going up. But when you're not just a consumer of those things, and even if you can just produce a little bit of some of those things, I think what we've seen is sort of like what they would call a force multiplier. Whereas 2 years ago, growing your own potatoes might have been, potatoes are cheap, whatever.
Yeah.
But now all of a sudden, that's been multiplied, hasn't it? What I'm saying now is Pink Potatoes is going to win. Pink Potatoes is going to win out.
No, you can keep
your free courgettes and your wild tomato.
No, that's never going to happen. But
Staples rule!
What I was going to say was, in response to that, actually down the line, it would be interesting to see if that does change.
Yeah.
It would be interesting to see if that attitude towards things does change, because I know for me it's been about the space, and we spoke about that before. I wonder at what point that tipping point comes where it is now suddenly more in my interest to grow potatoes.
I think that some things will always be cheap, won't they?
Mm.
Comparatively.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that, you know, on the scale of things, you know, how much they're costing, you know, according to how much people get paid or how much they cost, it isn't going to increase. So the proportion of your pay packet that you then spend on potatoes goes up and up and up.
Yeah, yeah.
And whereas you might be able to do without some things, there are some things you have to have. And so they actually become, as I say, force multiplied what their cost is. Because it's not just about the monetary value, is it? It's about that if I've got enough potatoes and I've got some wheat, then I'm all right, rather than it tastes really, really nice.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, because I was, obviously, I've been stashing flour over the course of this year, as you know, and I always do to an extent. And I was looking at the prices, and they don't seem to have gone up yet in the meal that I normally
They don't, use. Do they?
It doesn't seem to have changed yet. Whether it will, I don't know.
Would it be because we're still on last year's grain?
Could well be.
Which has been milled.
Yeah.
And perhaps
this year's will have been harvested now, though.
Well, it'll be coming in now, won't it?
Yeah.
It'll be really interesting to see.
Yeah.
I'm back on the flour that you buy, which is a much higher quality on paper.
Yeah.
I would say that the difference between it, now having worked with both flours, is that the second one required more water to get it to a workable dough. The cheaper one.
Yeah.
And I found that then gave the yeast the opportunity to really work through the whole flour. Mm. I can't say there was less gluten in it.
No,
not at all. And I don't think I've got a sophisticated enough palate to see any difference in flavour. I think that the consistency of the loaves doesn't really. Once I got that weight to water ratio worked out, my no need bread really.
I think a lot depends on. I mean, obviously, I'm using longer, slower ferments with the sourdough.
And I did change my yeast a few times.
Yeah, did you? Because I supposedly the higher protein content in those better quality flours is better for the slower ferments.
Yeah, and it's probably better for your gut. If you're someone who struggles with gluten, because I would imagine fast rise with, you know, really heavily yeasted fast rise probably is not as good for your stomach if you're someone who's got a slight wheat intolerance. I don't know if that's true.
I'm not sure, but I'd have to ask someone who's got that issue. Perhaps could
tell us. I know a lot of people who have issues with eating bread is because the commercial bread is really, really heavily yeasted.
Yeah, and heavily refined as well.
And then the rise is really fast, isn't it? So perhaps some of those natural sugars or whatever they are, or those, they're not getting converted in the bread, I don't know. But anyway, like yourself, I've got some wheat flour down and I haven't got the capacity to store loads, but I like to have, I think it's 16 kilos they come, aren't they? So I have 16 kilos I'm using and 16 kilos of reserve. That's where I'm at.
Yeah, whereas I've usually got
Two in reserve
and one that I'm using, yeah.
But I have got 16 kilos of wholemeal in reserve.
Okay.
So, and I don't use that, I don't get through that as quick.
No, I've been using that. Since the girls have gone off a bit, the homemade bread, I've gone over to, I can't say that I bake all our bread anymore, because we have to buy a bit of sliced white, believe it or not. I mean, it's mad, isn't it? But it becomes a luxury when you don't have it, I guess.
And absolutely. When they were kids, I know people who are exactly the same.
So, when I used to make load of wholemeal bread at home as well. We used to smash through that really fast, but not so much anymore.
Well, I make focaccia every week now,
and
that is really popular in my house.
Yeah,
and I make the no needs, but since one of my daughters moved away, I only make two loaves of that, so I balance it out. But I've started to explore making some rolls.
Yeah,
and it's not rather than have sandwiches, we tend to have a filled roll.
Yeah,
so I can actually make batch rolls. Oh, now and freeze them because then you're not having to worry about it looking like a sliced loaf.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a roll, so you slice it in half and put your filling in it, and it's actually lovely. So you could do that, or I quite like to try and get not full French sticks, but small baguettes.
Baguette, that'd be good, wouldn't it?
Because that's what we eat.
Yeah,
that's what we like to eat, and certainly, you know, in the morning, you know, having something like that on a Saturday with some home cured bacon in it.
Yeah,
that could be good, couldn't it? We get on to bacon in a minute.
Yeah, we're going to come on to bacon.
So you was asking me what else I was doing.
Yeah, what have been up to?
I'll tell you about the farm, what we've been growing. So it's mainly been tunnel work. I've had some problems with carrots because of the wet Some of my carrots I intended to store outside. I've had to get them in, mm-hmm. And I'm in the process of doing that. And I'm looking at storage options. And so one of the things that I'll be doing this podcast is asking people how they might store some of their stuff.
Okay.
I know some methods of storage,
yeah.
But before I start telling everybody what I know,
yeah.
I'd like to hear what other people might know about storing carrots. So if there's anybody out who's got... I've got quite a lot of carrots.
Quite a lot of carrots. And they brought them in because it's wet. Is that the gist of it?
Yeah, so I'm on very clay, heavy soil. And it had been... I think it's not that it's very wet. I think it's been very dry.
Mm.
And now it's very wet.
And now, well, what we get... I mean, literally this morning, I was just about to take the dog out. And someone could have been outside with the shower hose against the window of the door. Just like literally running it as fast as it would run straight on the window. That's how hard it was coming down.
And because I'm on clay... And
it sticks, doesn't it?
It can't drain through,
yeah.
And so it just washes off. But I've got these pans, which I think are probably holding water. So as long as the carrots haven't grown too much, they're about 8 inches long, they're all right. But anything over than that, they're sitting in that water. And I think I've got some brown rot, which is caused by carrots sitting in water, basically, the end of them. And you know, there might be some other things there. I'm not well up on carrot problems and issues. And I would say it's probably a third of the crops affected with it. And so I want to get them out. And I want to store them. And I've got some freezing capacity. I've got some fridging capacity. Mm. But at the moment, I've got maybe 10 green crates of... No, I haven't got 10. I've got about 5 green crates of carrots with mud still on them.
Yeah.
But they're drying now. They're in out of them wet. But I don't know how to store them, you know. And I've heard about packing them in damp soil or sawdust. I haven't got enough soil. I haven't. So, clamping are all things I've heard of. But I'd be really interested to hear what... people have done successfully, because they're my carrots till next spring.
Yes, so successful storage of carrots out of the ground. I'm assuming that people are going to come back with things like root cellars. Be interesting to see what people experience of that is.
I've got access to a cellar.
Okay.
With a good stable temperature.
Okay.
So that could be something that could work.
Then, okay. Yeah.
Whether they're packed in something or you leave the earth on them, though, that's what I want to know.
Yeah.
You know, and how often do you go through and inspect, and what kind of quality am I looking for over what kind of time?
Yeah.
Would I be better off maybe storing some in the freezer so I've got a bit of contingency, even though the processing and the washing and the cutting is like, you've got to take all that into account, because you're talking about probably a week's work.
To get that whole carrot harvest in. Yeah.
But that's all right.
Yeah, yeah.
That's okay. Because this time of the year, things have slackened off a bit.
Hmm.
So there's that. In the tunnel, it's brassicas, successional brassicas planting out. I don't know if I'd made the decision or not at the last podcast, but I had to get those cabbages out that I had cabbage aphids or grey aphid on.
Yeah.
I took the decision to get them up, and I'm really glad I did now, because everything else looks so much healthier already. And then as soon as the heat's gone down a little bit, the numbers of proliferation of those cabbage aphids has gone down as well. So I've done that. A lot of clearing.
Yeah.
But other than that, that's where I'm at, vegetable-wise.
Should we just pause a second? Because I know that we're going to turn the extractor. It's going to make a racket.
Well, I'm going to give people a little listen. It does sound like Alan's like stepping on budgets.
Squeaky wheel, man.
So we've got the honey now in there.
There it goes. Hey! That's going to be awful.
Go on, mate, bang it. That's Alan's pants. Go on, mate.
No, mate. That is not working. Right, sorry about that. I got a bit squeaky, as you heard. So, one thing we didn't do at the start...
Did you open in your wallet?
Yeah. No, it was just a flutter, mate.
Moths come flying out.
Not much in there.
Well, look, sound effects.
The one thing we didn't do, though, was talk about the weather, which I think is really important.
Go on, mate.
Because I've been walking the dog this week, and I go out in the morning between 6 and 6:30 normally, or thereabouts. Certainly between 6 and 7, and it's been 17 degrees where I've lived at times this week in the morning at that time of day.
It's October on record, mate.
It's got to be, isn't it? Sure.
No, it is.
Has it actually been said?
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. It's been so warm.
And we have had some wet, some damp, but it has been...
It's tended to rain in fits and starts when it has properly come down, like I was describing earlier.
Hoed it down, yeah. But the effect of... The effect of that here is that the grass is still growing.
Yep.
You know,
I'm at home this week. It's one of my jobs for the week.
I've been taking the beans down at work.
Yeah.
Still flowers on them.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm not sure, you know, we're taking them down because they won't have the length of time to get through and develop and all of those things. But yeah, still flowers on the beans. And
bonkers, isn't it?
That's absolutely mad. So you're going to hear a lot of clattering now because we've got a lot of jars. We've got a lot of lids, but they don't necessarily all fit the same ones. Oh, look, straight in there.
Boom.
Oh, one for one.
So that's Is that a 12 or a 51? I'm not sure. 21 maybe?
Oh, mine's unmarked, mate.
I think these lists just fit on everything.
Here we go.
It's going to really confuse everyone. Yeah, so it has been really warm. And I mean, I was just reminiscing with some friends and family the other night. We went out to watch some fireworks. And, you know,
people... Well, these are the ones that don't go on.
Oh, okay.
So the...
Hang on, where's that other...
Right, so... Right. Without a number...
Is the fat lids.
Is the gold... Fat what? Lids?
Yeah, they're slightly deeper.
Can't say that now, Alan.
The deeper. Larger lids.
Shinier, I was going to say. All right. Yeah, all right. Okay.
But so people are listening might not be aware that obviously in Sussex, bonfire night is a big thing, a big deal, big tradition.
Proper pagans here, mate.
Real, yeah, proper, like, yeah, it's just a little bit of irreverence,
I think. I've just blown my own theory there. Oh, no, I haven't.
No. Anyway, so we went out to watch some fireworks, bonfire and all that the other night, and I was reminiscing with, actually bumped into my sister.
No numbers, numbers.
All right. I'm reminiscing, bumping into my sister about the fact when we were kids, we used to go out and watch the fireworks.
Yeah.
And we'd be like wrapped up in all of our warm stuff, woolly hats, scarf, gloves.
That's it.
Hats, the whole thing.
He was there.
And still need to drink soup to keep warm.
Yeah. Right? You were there in your pants.
I was literally there in my short, like I am now, my t-shirt and my jeans, mate. It's mad.
Crazy, isn't it?
Absolutely crazy watching the fireworks. They're a lovely time, but.
Global warming in action, well, mate.
Hard to deny when you're doing that, isn't it?
Oh no, we've got a rogue here.
No.
What's this one? This is neither nor.
Go on, try that lid, I bet you. Or it might be the white lids.
Oh, hello.
Might be the white lids.
White lids? Where did they come from?
Just thrown out there.
Oh.
Little white lids.
Just thrown it in.
Yeah, so I think it's undeniable that it's been warmer this month, certainly than normal at least. As a consequence, I've still got tomatoes ripening outside.
Outside. My tomatoes outside are up.
Well, I'm
taking them up because they were getting rotten.
Well, I took most of mine down before the last podcast.
Yeah.
About half of them down before the last podcast.
Yeah.
But I left the ones that looked still in good condition.
Right.
They had small fruit on them, immature fruit on them.
Yeah.
And they are, I mean, I don't imagine for a second that they'll properly ripen.
No.
And they certainly won't go red, I wouldn't think. They're going to get to the point where when I bring them in, they will.
Right, okay.
So I've left them out for the time being. Which is, I mean, crazy to think in October, nearly the end of October.
Yeah, that is incredible.
Still got tomatoes growing in
the garden. Even my tomatoes in the tunnel now, even though the growth is healthy, the fruits are struggling.
Yeah.
Struggling a bit, yeah.
Well, I've noticed.
Rotting off really quick. They haven't got no. I'm almost having to pick them a bit underripe.
Yeah.
To get them to. Because they as soon as they ripen, they turn or split.
Yeah.
And then, you know, get well, a bit
I picked rot. Most of my indoor tomatoes today.
Right,
because I'd noticed I was starting to get some snail damage.
Oh.
They're actually starting to eat the tops of the fruits. And then, just to prevent them losing the rest of them, really. But I've got probably another half basket full, like right. Tesco crates we often use.
Yeah.
Another half one of those full of tomatoes again.
Okay.
So I just emptied out the freezer yesterday.
Yeah.
Most of the tomatoes are in there. I made a load of ketchup.
Very nice.
And it's going to be full up again by the end of the weekend, I think. Well, this weekend.
It's a nice problem to have, though.
Well, there are worse problems to have.
Yeah, too many carrots.
Too many carrots. Oh, dear. No numbers, you said, yeah.
No numbers outside, yeah. So it has been quite interesting, the weather, and we're noticing already, even in the few years we've been doing the podcast, you know, obviously the climate change effects to what we can grow and produce is already quite profound.
Well, I think
You can't ignore it.
I mean, it's encouraged me to take some chances and I had that nice, really late crop of beans.
Yes.
Which has been lovely. My courgettes are still just about producing. I'm getting a bit of blossom end rot now.
Right.
Quite bad. So I get the odd occasional fruit off of those. Obviously, the leeks are looking good. I've got purple sprouting broccoli going. You know those plants you gave me?
Yeah.
One of those.
That's very early.
Really big purple. It's just the one.
Outside. That's very early, mate.
Yep. But I mean, it looks really good. I'm going to eat it.
Brussels sprouts ready.
Oh, they?
Which is nice.
Mine are a little way off here.
My Brussels sprouts are ready. Yeah, sprouts are ready. I'm eating cauliflower.
Yep.
Swedes, parsnips, leeks. All those winter veg are ready. But it's just about trying to make sure that we've got enough now to get us going all the way through. So I have to say, chard and kale,
yeah,
they're doing it.
Well, I've got late sowings of Lola Rosso, which has come good.
Lovely.
I finally grew a carrot.
Wow.
Just one.
Really?
Just one. Don't want to get too carried away.
You grew one carrot.
One carrot.
Oh, mate, come around mine.
So, what happened was I tried to sow. I seem to be a few years shy. I tried to sow two rows of carrots, and for whatever reason, I don't know if it's the seed was old or whatever, I didn't get very good germination.
Yeah.
And it took ages, and then all of a sudden, one of them just sprouted up out of nowhere.
That is weird.
And so I've just left it where it was, and it's grown. I've got this nice, very nice little carrot. Not a big carrot, but a little one.
That's annoyed me out.
What, we're
a few shy.
Try this. Try this.
What?
Put a fat lid on that one.
Alan, they're not fat.
Deep lid.
Okay. Okay, that's good. I like that.
That make you feel better?
A little.
Yeah, that's on the wrong. Try that. Try the deep lid on that. No.
Nah,
the
deep
bits are not very good, I have to say.
No, it's weird, isn't it?
It's just a different design. But
I think the moral of the story is that when you start making things in bulk and you want to reuse them like year over year, stick to one brand.
Buy hundreds of type.
Yeah. So we've got we have got a bit of a penny mix. Well, we've got three jars shy. If we get that much honey, I'll be happy.
Well, I can say. Yeah, so
we probably will get a bit more than that, won't we?
I think we probably will. Yeah.
So how many shares do you reckon? Count them up.
This is good radio, this, mate.
This is what people tune in for, bruv! Hey, Alan playing with his jars. There we go, mate.
10, 20, 34. I reckon we're going to need a few more.
Well, we didn't do one cone, did we?
No, I'm quite happy though to take it home in the settling tank and jar up at home if I need to.
Oh, okay. Well, let's
find some more jars at home if I need to.
You sure?
Yeah, of course.
All right, well, let's do that then.
This jar we got,
okay,
and then whatever's left over, I'll do that with, alright?
But there'll be a little bit left to strain out in some of the, won't there?
Yeah.
In there and
that. Okay. So it looks like we've got quite a reasonable honey harvest. That would be very exciting.
More than we thought at the beginning of the year. A lot more. So what we'll do now is we're going to get our honey tank up and over. And we'll try and drip out some. Touch up.
So other than in the garden, I've been doing a lot of indoor work. I have to say, I've found it quite difficult to keep motivated.
All right, Paul, what's happening, mate?
I just think I'm really busy.
Yeah.
And not just with home and everything else, but with work. It's been really, really tough term at work, really long term at work.
Yeah.
Really
and that's important.
Challenging.
For us to remember, isn't it, is that, you know, even though I do some growing as my job, then that affects what you want to do when you're at home.
Yeah.
And... yeah. Those things that are on the periphery, like I was saying to you, I was in that place.
Yeah.
You know, some things suffer, and it's really important not to beat yourself up when you can't do everything at once, because there is a tendency to look at your list of homesteading or prepping jobs and be a bit overwhelmed with it, isn't there, sometimes?
Definitely, and certainly in the summertime I was feeling that, but it was all things I quite enjoyed doing, so although I was overwhelmed, it's like, I'm just going to keep plugging away.
Yeah.
And I think probably part of it is it's not quite so much fun.
No.
At this time of year. I like it when the sun's shining. I like getting outside when the sun's shining. Most of the harvest is in.
Right.
So now it's kind of more organising and tidying, and it's not quite so sexy.
No,
I don't know.
Nice.
It's not, is it?
But I don't do those things.
That's a solve that problem. Just don't do it.
Tidying and organising.
Sorry,
mate. I like doing... but things for me that, you know, I was saying to you, I know that there have been a few years where I haven't made crab apple jelly.
Yeah.
There's been 6 months where I haven't made a piece of bacon. There's been probably 3 years since I made a kit beer.
Mm.
There's been probably 5 years since I made an apple wine.
Yeah.
And now I look back on this last month, and they're all things that I've done. Yeah. And that has really helped me out.
And that's probably been a lot of what I've been doing. I can't quantify it, but I don't think I've grown more vegetables ever before than I have this year.
Yeah. Well, I'm safely say I've grown more.
Yeah, I should hope so. I told you I was coming after you if you didn't. But I can also, I've never preserved as many as I have this year either. And that's the other thing. And in different ways.
Mate,
I
have to get eye level here. Right,
mate.
It's a good go peak
tour. That bit. I'll write the jar, the lids. So there's part of it that's just been, I've just done loads of stuff already.
Sorry, Al, I can't even talk about nothing. Look at it, honey.
What colour of that?
So it's pale gold. It's like liquid gold, isn't it?
It's like
a
sample.
Very pale. Very pale. Almost green tinge there, but that might be the...
Absolutely beautiful. I'm going to enjoy this, honey.
You're going to need to put the lids on that we've got.
I know. I've got it covered. Amazing. Amazing honey. Look at the colour of that. Literally, it is almost fluorescent, isn't it?
Beautiful.
Amazing.
Get a couple of shots of
it. I will. I'll get up on the Facebook later on. No, it's incredible stuff. So, yeah, part of it probably is I've just done so much already this year.
Yes.
And it's just like, oh, just do a little rest now. And it's coming, because in the winter I do tend to just slack off a little bit.
There is that sort of hibernation vibe coming along in there.
I'm still waiting for it to really be cold enough to actually need to light the fire.
Oh, my house is cold.
I've lit it plenty of times, but I've not really liked it.
I ain't got no heating on though yet.
No, not we. It's come on. I've had it tick on a couple of times in the morning just because we haven't got time to do anything about it first thing in the day. But
too skinflip for that.
Yeah. Well, I find though, putting the oven on, just cooking the dinner, warms the house up enough. You don't need the heating on the minute still, which is mad. So we're nearly in November, and there's still no sign of frost for me. So I've had a bit of a malaise myself, and not really, not quite feeling it for whatever reason.
But this is all part of it, isn't it? These are those things. But when you are in that place, it is nice to know that you've got some capacity already out the back, and you've got your larder looking good. And I always find great comfort in those things. And
well, I wonder how much of it as well is knowing that that's the case.
Maybe.
Just there's not that element of urgency of I've got to keep pushing hard. I could just slack off a little bit if I want to, that kind of thing.
And your priorities change, don't they? I mean, I'm already thinking about, craft ideas for Christmas.
Yeah, me too.
And
yeah.
Stuff like that. And
yeah.
Thinking about what I might be able to do. And
making some gifts. And
taking some time out for me as well, you know. Yeah. I'm aware that I've been working hard up the farm and getting it all straight and organised. And I've got a few infrastructure projects on the go. My chickens need some real attention at the moment.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to work with them because...
What's going on with them then?
It's been really wet, and so I'm having to move their housing tomorrow. I've had to put a sub-base down, made proper sub-base out of crushed concrete and type one so that the drainage is better. And I'm almost going to go over to keeping them indoors during the winter with a cover over, you know?
All right.
Because the pasture pressure... is hard to look at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Got 30 birds over quite a very big space, I think. But the drainage where they are isn't good, which results in unhappy. And I cannot stand unhappy livestock.
No,
I just can't do it.
No point keeping it.
I can't do it. No. And so I had to put in some significant planning and no small cost to get it right. But by tomorrow, this time tomorrow. And have lovely, happy, dry birds.
Well, I've already got rats evident now in my...
I've caught about three or four whoppers in my garden already, yeah.
Well, I'm struggling. I've got some of those metal traps, like the one you lent me that time.
Yeah.
I'm struggling with it. I can't seem to get it to...
Okay. The thing that has worked more than anything this year for me is poison, unfortunately. Well,
trouble is, with the cats, I don't really want to use poison, because I know what's going to happen.
Mate, size of the rats I've been catting, I don't cat eating. Huge!
Yeah.
Buggers, yeah.
Our tomcat, I think he might have a go, to be fair. He's
absolutely.
He's a bit of a killer.
Well, they might need it. I've just had a couple of... You know, they obviously... I don't know quite how the poison works, but they certainly have been turning up in my garden dead.
Right, yeah. I don't want them turning up dead because the cat probably trying to eat them.
I don't think they will, mate.
No?
No. Well, my two dogs and my cat, though.
Okay, well, maybe worth a try.
Yeah. And that does seem to be the most effective way, so... unfortunately,
I found the traps really effective before, but I can't seem to get them sensitive enough without them being too sensitive, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
It's a pain, so I've got to try and figure it out this week. It's
like you, Al.
Yeah. Anyway, so the long and short of it is I've moved indoors a bit already.
Yeah.
And I've been doing a lot of preserving again.
Yeah.
A lot of preserving. I've been, the tomatoes that I've produced, so I got a big crate of tomatoes in a couple of weeks ago, and they've been ripening off really lovely indoors.
Mm-hmm.
And to the point now that I've got so many red tomatoes sitting there that, you know, it's like ridiculous again. So I had to clear some space in the freezer. So yesterday I got a load out and made some chutney, some ketchup.
Nice.
So I've got some nice bottles of ketchup on the go at home. Also made my Christmas chutney, that's done now. It's in the jars, ready to go.
It's going to have a little seasonal fest, isn't it?
Yeah, and I also did...
Have you got any photos of this?
Not yet. And I also did a... just a single gallon of cider because I had some apples. Well, the apples were going a bit funky, so I was just like, well, if I don't use them now, well, some of the ones I had, yeah. So I was just like, I'm just going to use these and then it's done.
Yeah. Well, that's what you need.
Yeah.
Oh dear, don't want that on there.
No, don't. Turn that camera around quick, you might break it.
Oi! Look how slime off. Don't jump the gun! Look! Oh mate, it's rubbish. This,
how slow is that?
It's 1950s phone. Right, go. Oh, look at that.
That is good, isn't it? It's literally, it's fluorescent. I'm not joking. Yes, I made my single gallon of cider, which is my vinegar sorted for the year, at the very least.
Well, I definitely want to make some cider this year.
And my brother-in-law's saying the same. I've just got to find some time to do it. It's just, I'm so busy.
But the base is just make some cider.
So?
To make the cider vinegar, first you just make some cider.
Yeah, yeah. That's what
so I'll do a few single gallons, yeah?
Yeah, that's what I've done. I just literally did, and it took me, I don't know, an hour maybe, over the weekend. Just out there on my own, just... You know, processing and that, but it's a really nice thing to do as well.
Yeah, it is.
Lovely thing to do. Much nicer to do with other people, but really lovely thing to do. So I've done that. What else have I been up to? Making compost.
Oh, yeah.
That's been my other one. I keep saying the last few times I've said it, I'm still on that one. Really busy just keeping the compost ticking over and making sure that we've got compost for next year. So now my three bays are all full.
Lovely.
With material. Some of it's partially composted down already, but I've been turning that this weekend. I got in there and turned all the piles, started a new one up, and I'm just now trying
never
to.
Never going
to
get through that, I mean.
No. How much is still in the extractor?
I'd say you're going to get. I'd say you might
have still quite a bit in the extractor.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Another 5 or 10 jars in there. So, yeah, it just it's quite. That's the nice thing about this time of year, though, is it's quite varied.
Yeah, there's
a lot of things you can do. And I've been doing a lot of baking. As well. What?
Cappy. Yeah, I was just going to scrape. I think some of it's sitting in the top here because it can't get through the first mesh.
Often where's happens. It? Where's it's it? Not in the green tray.
Maybe.
Yeah, so just quite a nice variety of things. A lot of it indoors, some of it outdoors. Log store's looking good, which is nice. Been making some kindling myself. I managed to get off some pallets. We're knocking that up into kindling, which is really nice, and it burns really well, so that's a really good way of getting the fire going.
And it just... Mate, I've got to talk about fires.
Go on, talk about fires.
Oh, right, I've had a Damascus moment.
Go on.
Do you know when you don't want something to work, but it does, and it's really good? You know what I mean?
Don't want something to
work. Don't want something to work, because you've done it differently your whole life.
Right, oh, okay, yeah. All right, go on.
Thought I'd try this top-down fire. Honestly.
Yeah.
So, obviously, I've always made my fire. I think we've even done a podcast.
We've talked about it. Yeah.
So, I've been reading about this top-down fire starting method. And I thought, oh, I've got to give it a go. I've used it for every fire this year. And I've used, I don't know, maybe I've had 30 fires. I've used 30 matches every single time. So, I've been using this top-down fire method, which I got... out of a book or from you or something.
Well, I mention it, certainly, because it's what I do.
Yeah. And it seems to work really well. And the reason I'm struggling is because it's not that it's a different way. It's because it's totally the opposite way.
It couldn't be more opposite.
It couldn't be more opposite than the way I've always done it. And it works beautifully.
Yeah.
Beautifully in the stove. I've yet to try it outside. That's my thing.
Okay.
But I've heard that it works lovely for all manner of fires. So... I'm going to give it a go.
That's brilliant.
It's unbelievable.
Makes me happy, that.
Well, you know, I've been making fire for a long time, but if something works, you've got to go for it, haven't you?
Yeah.
So the top-down fire lay, if you're someone who's never done it, is you basically put the logs on the bottom, then the sticks, and then your little kindling or paper or whatever on the top, and you just light the top and leave it alone.
Yeah.
And it does beautifully. And for me, what it has done is... It's probably actually saved me a bit of kindling.
It's supposed to be more efficient.
I know it's supposed to be more efficient for burning, and you know you get more wood vapor burning and all that jazz.
Yeah.
But it's also more efficient in matches and probably kindling.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing that you know, you can light it and then walk away because the logs are already on it.
Yeah.
So you don't have to sit there and tend it. And so I tend to just get the fire ready and. I'm lucky in that my wife's an ex, probably a much better fire starter than I am anyway.
Yeah.
But I would imagine it would be a really nice thing to have set up so that if maybe your children or people you were teaching to maybe set the fire, it's a lot easier than all this kind of aerating and bellows and blowing and all of this jazz. So a lot of people take a lot of time, you know, getting the fire going, having to blow in the party embers at the bottom and all that. Yeah, so I know that for my kids, I'll be certainly teaching them that method as a way of lighting our fire at home, because I think it'd be safer as well. They can light it and shut the door and leave it, and then the fire's going, no big flames, and then, you know, then when they need to put a log in, they don't have to open it to the flaming door, they can just open it, put a log in and shut it.
It's literally genius, I have to say. That's what I've used from the start. Yeah. I found that having better quality kindling has made it much better. So before, when I was chopping up the logs, it wasn't so good.
Probably a bit wet.
Yeah, probably still a little bit too wet. And now I'm using pallets. It's amazing.
Heat treated pallets, mate.
Yeah, great, amazing. And the only other thing is I found that the little fire starters that I made at the beginning of the season, I've made some little bundles that I would put in there with like birch twigs and stuff in it, and the bits of whatever paper and whatever I've got, a bit of twine to then tie up in a little bundle. And I'd stick that in the middle and then layer the kindling on top of that. And that was literally one match burn every time. Mm-hmm. Since I've run out of those, it's been a little bit harder. So I'm going to just find some time at some point this week maybe to make a few more.
I'll just paper.
Well, I use a bit of paper, a bit of cardboard at the minute, but the stuff I did with the birch twigs, mate, that was
Well, birch twigs is
absolutely superior to anything else.
But one of the things that's led to for me is, you know, there's a lot of people now talking about using wood-burning stoves, and they've become more popular because of the pressures on people heating their homes and stuff like that. And so I'm definitely going to try and bag some kindling up to flog it.
Right.
And there's a few people doing it on Facebook Marketplace, but there isn't anybody just doing it where I am. And I think for the sake of a couple of hours' work to do some quite big batch bags and stuff like that, like all things, it could mean that, you know, I'll get a bit of extra revenue and stuff like that, and it's pretty much zero cost.
Well, it's amazing how quick it adds up. I mean, just the eggs I sell on the gate, I maybe sell half a dozen once or twice a week. It's incredible how quickly that adds up. You know, I'm not talking about huge amounts of money, but it certainly pays for the feed for the chickens.
Well, that's how you've got to always look at it. When you make something and it's only a small bit a week, don't think about it like pounds and pence.
No.
What I tend to do is think about, you know, if I make a tenner a week, then I think about something that costs me a tenner a week, and then suddenly it don't cost me anything.
Yeah, yeah. And suddenly that's free in your head, and it feels a bit better, doesn't it?
Oh, it feels cracking.
Yeah. So I still haven't yet done the... I talked about getting some cosmetics or soaps or something out of my store. So that's something I've got to still do. Still in the.
I've had a rim shot.
Oh, mate.
I've had a bit of side spill.
No, it didn't actually spill.
Didn't it?
Believe it or not, it's actually stayed in. Yeah. Oh, mate, just
lucky, wasn't it? Lucky.
Just. So yeah, I haven't done that yet, but that's going to be one of the things. I want to make some shampoo bars, and I'll make some soap and put that out. Maybe some lip balms.
For Crimbo or
well, I'll do some for Crimbo, but what I'll do is I'll do enough then for us. And then a few spares just to put a few out.
I don't need any shampoo.
We're using chestnuts.
I've got the hair problem. What are you talking about?
You got your beard?
Have you made any beard balm?
No, not yet, but
beard,
I could do.
Beard shampoo.
That's a thing, isn't it? Beard balm?
Beard balm. Beard balm for men, mate. That's serious. I don't think I'm going to get any more now.
Oh, okay.
I think we've hit the diminished return. Let's
get the extractor going again. Okay, and we're back, and we just wanted to talk a little bit about something. We actually, because we sometimes we get a bit carried away, don't we? Right?
Hey, picky, picky.
We get a bit carried away, and we sit and say, "I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll do that for next time." That's what we'll do, and then quite often we never get around to doing it because there's so much other stuff going on. And actually, for once, what we've done is we've said we're going to do something.
We've done it.
I'm thinking,
and it all started with me eating ribs, mate, didn't it?
It did start with your bacon ribs.
Oh, man.
So, did you eat those in the end?
The bacon ribs were incredible.
I think when we last spoke, you were about to eat them.
Yeah, they were great.
Yeah.
Done them in a pan of water.
Yeah.
Oh, ate them with... I forgot my cabbage that day, unfortunately, so I just had them, I had them with green veg.
You were getting all excited about your cabbage.
I know, mate. And I had them with a pint of Guinness.
Yeah.
They were fantastic.
Okay.
I mean, like...
I'm really pleased.
Took me back. Unbelievable, life change. But then of course, I'm sitting there going, I'm eating these ribs. I've cured them myself at home. Why am I not making bacon?
Mm-hmm.
Why did I stop making bacon?
Yeah.
And I think I had one which was too salty.
Yeah.
And then it was a bit like hit and miss. And so a bit like with the brewing of the beer that we've both been doing as well. What I'm trying to do is go back, be a bit more methodical and get some consistency. So I've kept some quite detailed notes this time around about amounts and also... Once that comes out, which is tonight,
Yeah. I'm going to try and give it a really uniform kind of approach as to what I do next.
Okay.
Because all I want is to know that if I spend the money on the meat, I get the product that I need, because otherwise it becomes not cost effective.
Yeah.
So my 1.2 kilo piece of pork loin, and for, I mean, there's the people all over the world, isn't there, thinking of probably listening to this now.
Yeah.
So you either want a whole piece of belly or a piece of pork loin, yeah? Mm-hmm. And
tell your butcher what it's for, really important.
Yeah. Talk about it. Yeah, I mean, I didn't get mine from a butcher's though.
Okay.
Mine was supermarket bought, yeah. And I won't, you know, I don't mind saying, I bought mine in Sainsbury's.
Yeah.
And that seemed to be the most reasonable.
Yeah.
But what I was also able to, because I went in the day before and there wasn't any. And so when I went in the next day and there were, I knew that it was fresh.
Yeah, okay.
Because I think I took him on board what you were saying about the salt and the sugar fighting against the meat going off. That's what you're fighting against all the time. Yeah. And so I got the piece of rolled boneless loin of pork. And obviously I just uncut the, you can see on the end there, it looks like a rasher of bacon, so you know.
Yeah.
But some people I know have tried to do it and they've had a ready basted one.
Yeah.
So you do need to just have a little look at what's been done to
it.
Because sometimes it might have had some different things done
one
to it.
One thing I would say is on that, is if you're going to go and buy it from a supermarket, Morrison's is really good for that.
Yeah, in the UK this is
in
now.
The UK, because they actually have butchers on their meat counters. And so I've been in there and I've said to the butcher, right, I want the cut for this. And they'll go, oh yeah, what you want, mate, is this.
Yeah.
And then they'll tell you how to cook it, even if you ask them.
Yeah.
So if you go in there and you can't find the cut that you want,
they'll
often
do
if you
it,
ask them, they'll do it for you.
I agree.
Whereas in some of the other places, I'm not sure that's the case.
You can't buy a whole piece of belly in a lot of supermarkets.
No.
The reason I bought it in the supermarket is because it's considerably cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you about the provenance of the pork. I imagine it's not amazing.
Well, I think we spoke last time.
Yeah, we did. So what I've done is I've tried to get something that I can get reasonably priced, because it's going to take some time, but I'm hoping that the quality of the bacon that I'm going to make will be great.
It'll be better than the stuff you buy in the shops typically, because you won't, I don't imagine, like me, I imagine you don't buy a dry cured bacon.
Well, I was.
Well, yeah.
Because it was still better value.
Right.
Because you didn't need as much.
Okay, yeah.
Because it wasn't shriveling up and had been injected with brine, which is how a lot of bacon is produced in this country.
I have to say, and that, it's the case for most bacon that you buy in this country. It specifically tells you it's dry cured, but there are some brands and packs that are better value and better quality.
Absolutely.
So, again, going back to my Aldi shop, they do what looks like a mini catering pack of bacon.
Yeah.
Costs about £4 for, I don't know how much it is, 1.2 kilo probably, something like that. Get about 16 rashers maybe. But they're slightly fatter.
1.2 kilos, 16 rashers. That's some.
That's not right.
Is that gamma now?
Well, they're quite fat. Yeah. Right? They're quite thick. And they don't shrivel up nearly as much.
500 grams? 750?
No, it's more than that.
750.
But anyway, whatever it is. It's about 16 rashers. And it comes out and it's a bit thicker cut.
Yeah.
And it doesn't shrivel up nearly as much. Whereas when you buy the kind of the little rectangular packs that most people will be used to now.
Yeah.
That, I mean, you know, I cooked some of that side by side at the weekend. It was just like,
well, about they 350 grams a day, those packs normally. 350 grams in one of those.
I'm not sure what they are, to be honest, but they're not 7 or 8 rashers normally, aren't they?
Yeah. What's that?
Some wax moth larvae there. That's nice, isn't it?
Mm. Well, that's why we strain.
Yeah.
Mind you, it could have been like tequila. You could have had that at the bottom of the jar.
Yeah, I can't picture that. And eat that. Can't picture that bad word. That's brilliant.
I know what the podcast is going to be called. Al, you know I'm going to dare you to eat that now, don't you?
You know I'm not going to do it as well, don't you?
So what we've got here is, oh, mate, look at that. That is
wax moth larvae, which is well and truly past its best.
There you go, he's done. I'm not going to dare you to eat
that. No, I wouldn't eat it anyway, you're good.
Yeah, he would. He's eating it, everyone, anyway. So, I know that I can't say how good the quality of the pork is, but what I'm after is, at least I can take care of it from this side and give it the juice.
What you can do is go and, like we said before, try and buy the outdoor bread if you can, at least.
Yeah.
And obviously, if you can buy, you know, free range, whatever they call it, then great. But obviously, that's a lot more expensive often.
So, I wanted to use, only because I had it, I've got saltpeter at home.
Yep.
Okay. There is a difference between curing salt and saltpeter.
So is it specifically saltpeter you've got?
I've got saltpeter.
You've been making.
I'm not saying anything. All right, so that's what I've got. which is a very, 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 I'm not, I can't disclose
first problem
any of these. We're getting close to fireworks. I can't disclose any of my side hustles. Saltpeter is available online.
Yep.
It's a form of nitrate.
Mm-hmm.
You might be able to find something called Prague powder.
Yep.
Or pink curing
salt. That's really easy to get.
All the same. Yeah. Saltpeter is now not hard to get hold of online.
Right, okay.
Buy on Amazon.
Right.
Buy on eBay. Okay. And I think, looking back at my last cure, I think I used way too much.
Right, okay.
Saltpeter.
Okay.
And it was...
That's what the problem was, was it?
Not going into the dangerous, could kill myself territory, but it's first cousin.
Okay.
Saltpeter is a form of nitrate. And when I was looking at the amount of saltpeter I would need for a kilo of meat, it's a fifth of a teaspoon.
Right, okay.
And
not hardly any.
And I would say I used a bit more than that.
Right. Okay. I don't use that at all.
No.
Don't use that at all.
And the reason for using saltpeter or curing salt or Prague powder is one, because I think it probably does aid longevity if you're going to keep it for a very long time. Mm. As in, you're a cottager, it's 1700, you've cured your own bacon,
you need it to last until the spring.
Yeah. Yeah. The second thing it does is keeps the meat pink.
Yeah.
And I can't describe it in any other way in that it's really, really salty. Yeah. It has a different flavour. All right?
Mm.
The small amount that I've put in, I was very careful about measuring out. And so I've done a mixture of salt, sugar, and saltpeter.
Okay.
You might be able to do salt, sugar, curing salt. The amounts of each of those things that you put in depend on what kind of product you want, though.
Yep.
And obviously, the more sugar you put in, you're going to get a sweeter cure, in a sense. Mm-hmm. But something that I read about, which I thought was quite interesting, was that a lot of that in our modern palate is to cover the taste of the salt.
Mm.
Right?
Yep.
So what people have done is they've got some different processes now where perhaps they won't salt it as much or for as long. Then they don't have to put as much salt and sugar on, but then it might not keep as long. But typically, how long does bacon last in your house, Alan?
Well, not very long.
A week, never mind a month.
Well, yeah.
So, and what we're fighting against is something which I'm becoming more and more aware of online. It's funny that we're adding to it, but there's too much information about making bacon online. There really is. There's so much conflicting advice. There's so many different recipes that, like I said to you with the beer and the bacon, I'm just trying to find something that works for me.
Yep.
And what I have managed to find is an article by something that worked for somebody.
Yeah.
And the way it was written, I thought I had an affinity with that. They said, there's loads of advice. This works for us and it's accurate. And so that's what I've used. And that was a combination of a Guardian article and something on the accidental smallholder.
Well, so the recipe I use is from Simon Dawson, who is a smallholder in Devon.
Yeah.
And he wrote a book.
Yeah.
In fact, wrote a few books, but the one that I first found him for was one that's called Pigs in Clover, which is the story of how he ended up being a smallholder.
Yeah.
But he's also done a self-sufficiency Bible.
Yeah.
Which just does very basic guidelines on all of the basic things
which
that
is what you need, might do, isn't right? It?
And his one, I think, is 2/3 salt, 1/3 sugar.
Yeah.
And then you do, I think it's 150 grams per kilo or something like that. I forget exactly the details, but I can put that up if people want it. And that works really well for me. I don't have any of the nitrates in there.
No.
Which is what I wanted when I set out doing it. So one of the points of doing it for me was to not have the nitrates, which means that my bacon isn't as pink as the stuff I buy in the shops.
No.
And I'm okay with that.
Yeah. It tastes great.
But it makes really nice bacon.
It does,
It does make really nice bacon. So,
and I think that if I was in a position where I didn't have... however many grams of saltpeter up on my shelf.
Yeah, yeah. Is it grams or kilos?
In my laboratory. On my shelf.
Is it grams or kilos? Come on.
Well, it's pallets, isn't it? Pallet loads. Anyway, so the cure that I'm using, I think, is 60 grams of salt per kilo of meat.
Okay.
Right? And then I think I'm trying to remember. It was less, obviously less than that, and I think it's probably the same ratio that you're looking at of sugar. But I'm very aware of that. The saltpeter is going to add to that, but that was taken into account. So I'll be interested to see what happens. Now, but of course, sugars, not all sugars are created equal, are they? So
no.
I used brown sugar because I had it.
Yep.
But I used table salt because I had that.
Yeah.
I didn't have.
To be fair, if you're trying to make it with posh salt, it's going to cost you a fortune.
Mate, but there are recipes that tell you you have to use curing salt or Maldon sea salt.
Yeah.
Good luck getting a kilo of that.
Well, I'd buy it in kilo, 1.4 kilo tubs, but still, I don't want to be using 150 grams of that to make some bacon every other week.
And so, for me, that was the first part that I wanted to just get really consistency. So that's the first part. Now, the second part is that, and this is where the bit about saltpeter comes into it, is that a lot of people will make up a lot of their curing mix or dry cure, and then as you put the meat into the cure, it leaches out moisture.
Yep.
And then they're pouring that off
yep.
and putting more of the dry cure on.
Yeah, don't do that.
Right? Because they're then, I think, well, it's got to be covered or I've got to, and some recipes tell you to do that.
Wow.
But then if you think about the amount of saltpeter you're putting onto your meat, quite possibly it's
too
increasing.
Much. Yeah.
So I tried something which I'd heard, right? So a lot of the commercial butchers, certainly people I know have worked in commercial butchers, vat pack their meat.
Yeah.
So they put the cure on it and then they pack it. Well, how does the moisture come away? It doesn't.
It doesn't.
It can't.
In there. You can see where you can often see it sitting in those catering packs.
That's right. So it's not dry curing, really. It's wet curing, but it's sort of kind of a bit of both. But what I felt was important about that was, one, it's a bit cleaner and tidier in the fridge. I have to say, it's not slopping everywhere and all that. But also, for me, I could really control the amount of cure because I didn't need to add any or take any away.
So are you looking at backpacks then?
No, I wrapped mine in cling film, mate.
Okay, so...
Because that's what I had.
Isn't it weird? Because I've literally got on my phone... A search that I did for a home like domestic backpacker.
Yeah.
Not for bacon,
yeah,
but for cheese.
Cheese. Yeah.
Which
Dan Hunt Revan's got one.
Right, okay.
So don't buy one until you've had a go at that.
No, I'm certainly try it first, but I'm looking at it and thinking, well, in terms of the cheese it might make sense. If it also makes sense in terms of the bacon, then it's almost a no brainer to just pull the
cheese. Yeah, and expensive. It certainly would make sense when you are freezing your vegetables, it'll certainly give them extra longevity.
Yeah.
Because you can pull all that air and moisture out
before
you put them in. So I've wrapped mine in cling film.
Okay.
And because cling film isn't backpacking, there was some seep out, but way less than normal.
Okay.
And what I had to do, because I backpacked it, it said I didn't need to, but I turned it every day.
Yep.
Upside down, just so that if there was a kind of concentration of the salt on one side or the other because the moisture had brought it round, I would turn it round and invert it and it would do the opposite.
So for people who have never done it before, I mean, when I'm doing this, I'm putting it into a big, typically not a non-metal container.
It's got to be non-metal.
Yeah, and I prefer a glass one for that or a Pyrex one for that.
And I went plastic.
Yeah, and so then what you
food
do
food grade.
So you make your cure up, you sprinkle that over the bacon.
Rub it all over,
everywhere you can get it. And then you're going to sit it in the fridge, and every 24 hours you should take it out, pour off any liquid that comes out, because it leaches all the salt leaches all the moisture out, same as it would do on
vegetables.
Which
is what you're trying to do.
Exactly the point of it, it's doing its job. And then you're going to take that off, pour off any liquid, and then turn it to make sure that it's evenly covered, I suppose. But I've done it where I've scooped up the salt that's in the bottom, because it tends to sit off, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It tends to get washed off.
Wash it back in, rub it back in.
And then sometimes I haven't, it still comes out right.
Yeah. And the idea is that, you do this for, and mine said 5 to 7 days.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
For a loin.
And mine says 5 to 10 days.
For a?
Depending on what you're doing.
Right, okay. So I've gone
for
5 days because my, and I think it's because I know mine was so salty last time. So I've gone for a 5-day cure, right? But then the bit that I probably didn't do as well last time is that when I get it out of my cure tonight, I'll do this when I get home.
Yeah.
You wash it.
Yeah.
And then you dry it, but then you don't put it back in the fridge. Right?
Oh,
so I'm going to try this.
All right.
It's got to be cool.
Yeah.
But it doesn't need to be in a damp environment, because your fridge is a damp environment. It's not dry, cool, right?
That's interesting.
So what you're supposed to do is meat hook it and hang it in a cool larder.
Right.
And what you're after is this thing called a pellicle, which is a skin, basically.
Right.
It's a form, right?
Yeah.
Right. And that might take 3 days.
Okay.
It might take a week. Right, but a cottage ham wasn't in a fridge.
No,
And wow. As we spoke about, it might be that winters were cooler back in the day.
I think,
you know, yeah. But we're not talking about a fridge. We're talking about now, if it could go in the smoker then and have an increased kind of pinnacle, which would help it save. But there are uncooked, unrefrigerated hams, which are years old, aren't they?
Well, Parma ham's exactly that, isn't it? You see it hanging up in the Italian restaurants often.
Covered in muslin.
Yeah.
Hanging for a couple of years.
Yeah.
In a restaurant.
Yeah.
So we're not talking about cooling are we?
No, we're not. No.
So it's about me finding a way of getting it right.
That's really interesting. I think
so. I'm going to try it for 3 days.
Yeah.
And I know where I'm going to hang it.
Yeah.
I'll hang it in my shed.
Okay.
Because my shed is cool and it doesn't get very hot and it's rodent and pest free.
Yeah.
And I'm going to hang it off the roof. And luckily enough, I have got meat hooks. Not everyone will have a meat hook. But if you haven't got a meat hook, I advise you to make a hole in it and put a bit of string through it.
Well, that'll do it. Yeah.
Yeah. And the idea is then it's in the air, and if it starts to get a white mould, which it might.
Yeah,
that's the mould that you get on salami.
Yeah.
And if you don't like it, you can just wipe it off with a rag soaked in vinegar.
Wow.
All right, just a little bit off,
yeah.
if it's unsightly. And I'm going to do that for 3 days. And then I will try and use my meat slicer that I've got. I'm not imagining the meat slicer to be great. I don't think it's a particularly good meat cutter.
No.
But the other thing I've heard is that it's actually easier to use that meat cutter if I freeze it,
put it in the freezer for an hour. Away.
Yeah. So, I'm willing to try. But what I will do as soon as I've done one, if it tastes okay, I'm going to make another one exactly the same.
Okay. To see else we were saying recently, which was that sometimes when you do a process over and over, you get better at it. You certainly get more efficient.
But if the level of salt is all right, my next thing then is to use. Friend's got a smoker.
Yep.
And I would like then, because I actually prefer smoked bacon.
Me too. Ain't bacon, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, this is going to be green bacon. And so I'm really looking forward to being able to then try the smoke. And I know that I will not want to buy the wood chips for that smoke. I will want to go and get them or make them.
Well, you're going to get some apple wood, aren't you, surely?
I'm going to find a tree and make my own sawdust.
Yeah.
So... Applewood smoked, or
oak
smoked. I've got plenty of oak. I can get that. What about the old birch bacon, bruv? That's got to be up there, isn't it?
It's just any of it, mate.
Birch smoked.
Yeah, any of those will
that's
do.
It's got a nice flavour too, isn't it? Birch bacon, birch smoked bacon. BSB, get your BSB out.
I love it. That's
Rowan,
amazing.
Rowan rashes.
So when I've done it before, I've wrapped it in greaseproof paper and put it back in the fridge. When I've done mine, and that's kept really well. I keep it for a month like that.
Once I've air dried it,
it
will go back in the fridge.
Yeah.
It's the pellicle forming, that skin,
right,
that you have to do in an unmoist environment.
Isn't that interesting? Because cheese is kind of the same.
Yeah. And
that's where I'm going wrong a bit at the minute, I think, with my cheese.
Putting it back in the fridge.
Once I've got it formed, I'm putting it in the fridge, which is a moist environment, and it should be out in the air, but I've not yet had the guts to leave it out on the side and let it do that and air dry, because I'm worried about it getting contaminated.
Well, about someone coming along and eating it. Where you live, mate?
There's less of a risk in my
house. Fella walk along with a baguette, sees that, he's like, "Marry that bad boy."
No, I'm safe, you don't live there.
That's true, mate.
Oh, dear, what's going on with these?
I don't know what the opposite is of scrumping for cheese.
Sure, there's a word for it.
Cheese robbing.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's my process for bacon, and I'm happy to put the links to the two articles that I found, which I've kind of mixed up, but the proof will be in the pudding, and I'll let that pellicle form for 3 days. So I'm thinking that next Saturday morning is going to be a good bacon sandwich. I'll wait until then.
I need to see you before then. I'll bring you some ketchup up.
It's going to be good, isn't it? It's going to be good. I just hope it's good.
When am I seeing you next?
I don't know. Who knows, mate? But the first one might have to be ketchup free, you know.
Well, I was meant to bring you some ketchup today, and I've left it at home, so I have to bring
you
some.
Glaze it with a bit of honey. Slap it. Anyway, it'll be interesting to see how we go, but I know that sitting there with my own eggs from the garden, a bit of bacon that I've cured myself, on toast that I've made myself. I wish I had some butter I'd made myself, but I haven't yet.
Well, you see, I won't get on that daisy.
Yeah, she'll be coming soon, don't you worry. So that's where I'm at, and I always thought that bacon was a dark art.
But it isn't really. No. But I think it's almost the other way. I think there's too much confusing information out there.
I think it's when you're starting out and you've never done it before, and obviously we were talking about what, a year ago when we were in that position. Yeah. my first thing was, well, there's lots that can go wrong, so I'm investing a lot of money in a piece of meat.
It is a lot of money. Right?
And you know, that piece of meat might be two or three roast dinners for my family.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that amount of money. So it's quite a lot.
Yeah, it is. Well, that I bought a 1.3 kilo boneless loin.
Yeah.
And it was £9.80.
Yeah.
£9.80. Yeah. So whereas that's a lot of money.
Whereas my belly pork was, I think I had 1.6 kilos for about 15 quid.
Mm.
From the butchers.
Mm.
Which is two or three roast dinners worth of meat for my family, right? So it is a big risk. And so, you know, you look at it and you're like, well, I've got to try and get this right. I can't afford for it to go
absolutely
wrong.
Absolutely.
And the other thing is, we are conditioned to believe that meat lives in the fridge.
Mm.
And that it's got a very short shelf life.
Yeah.
Which is, none of which is untrue.
Right.
But when you start curing it, that changes it. And that's the whole point. Otherwise, why would you bother curing it?
Absolutely.
You know.
That's what it's all about. And I think that looking at the piece of belly I've got, it might make the equivalent of 3 or 4 packs of bacon.
Yeah.
So then I've suddenly got a month's worth of bacon for £9.
Yeah.
Probably 10 quid once I had the sugar and salt.
And that doesn't because feel so bad, does it?
If it's good, it doesn't feel bad at all.
Fact,
if it's great, I feel like I'm suddenly winning.
Yeah.
And I just want to be able to have a consistent product. And like that. I keep going over to that word consistency today. But I think that in uncertain times, that's what we're looking for.
Well, I think also in your scenario, you are looking to produce this so you don't have to buy it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because that's the whole point of the project.
And get into a cycle of it.
And not just for you, but maybe for more than one family.
Well, at the moment, it's definitely just for me.
Right.
But I think that what I will be doing is exploring things on a personal level, which I then might want to take into an opportunity where I've got someone who actually keeps pigs. So now maybe I could help him add some value.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then it could be a revenue stream for me. But the other side of it then becomes about learning. I want to learn more. I want to learn how to do this. So then you can then share that knowledge and share those skills. But above all, mate, I just want a good bacon pie.
Doesn't that just bring it full circle back to where we started?
Just want a good bacon sandwich, Al.
Oh, mate, isn't that the truth?
That's it, bro.
Oh, we ain't going to top that. We should leave it there.
All right, mate.
But thank you very much again, everyone, for listening. Thank you, mate, for your time as well, because it's been really good catching up with you. Hopefully we weren't too distracted in the first section. We are up to now, I don't know, 26 jars or something filled up with honey. So we're going pretty
nice,
well. We're going to fill all these jars and a few more besides, by the looks of it, which is a really good return on our year's worth of beekeeping. So thank you very much for listening. We will endeavour to be back in another couple of weeks' time. And in the meantime, please look after yourselves out there. Please tell everyone you know about us. Please, if you're not already in the Facebook group, get in the Facebook group and share.
Or if you're in the Facebook... Oh no, I can't tell people to listen to the podcast if they've never listened to the podcast.
No, if you're in the Facebook group, listen to the podcast. No, it doesn't work. but please tell your friends about us and please share and like and all those good things. But also share all the stuff you've been up to. It's so cool to see other people contributing in there now, which is happening more and more regularly, and sharing their experiences and their knowledge. And was it Jason that commented on the yeast washing last time?
Absolutely.
Which was really helpful. So thank you very much for that feedback as well. Answer some of the questions that we don't know the answers to. And it's always nice to learn from other people. So thank you very much. And we'll speak to you again soon. Cheers. So thanks very much, everyone, for listening through to the end of another episode of the Urban Homesteading UK podcast. If you've enjoyed what you're listening to, please come and join us on our Facebook group. You can come find us on Urban Homesteading UK on Facebook. Come and find us on Instagram and all those other good places. Please tell your friends about us and do come and listen again. Thank you. Bye-bye.